County. Pardon me a second. I have to go over and have a trustees committee meeting. It's a little warm in here, isn't it? There, trustees have fixed that problem. Well, yesterday at annual conference, the appointments were fixed for the next year, and I was here officiating a wedding, but I believe that I was appointed back for another year to be among you. Well, I didn't expect applause. And it was a joy, actually, to be here for what, after 3 years, was my first full-blown wedding in the building. It's taken that long to have one, you know, all the stops out. So it was a good celebration yesterday with Emily Holmes and her new husband, Josh. That's Christine and Rich and Christine Holmes' daughter, if you know them from the congregation. You want to hear the joke that I didn't tell? The bishop said to me when she met me, she said, "You're the one that's known for the stupid jokes." So a man retired, and he decided that he wanted to spend some time seeing the country, but he was afraid to fly, and he thought that if he took a train, he could stop and he could see more of the countryside. So it was late in the season for this particular train itinerary. He ended up getting the last sleeping car for the trip. And he had a room with somebody, but he wasn't sure who it was. This created a little bit of an anxiety for him. So he walks into the sleeping car and he sees the bunk bed sitting there and a suitcase already unpacked and the bunk bed and the top already taken, and realizes it's a 25-year-old blonde. And he's kind of, wow, you know. Well, they go and they have their dinner and they come back for a sleeping and then go to sleep at night. And in the middle of the night, the woman knocks on the bedpost and says, "Sir, excuse me, would you wake up a minute? I'm cold. Would you reach into the closet and get me a blanket?" And he says, "Well, better than that, let's pretend we're married." You tell this in church? And she pauses, and then she says, "Well, okay." He says, "Get up and get your own blanket. Don't wake me up again." Hey! Wow. How long have you been planning that one, Jeff? Oh, fantastic. So last week and this week and next week, I've chosen to try to get a little bit more in touch for this summer with the nature of God's love. And to do that by looking at a story that is a very common story that Connie read very well, the prodigal son story. And last week I mentioned that prodigal means one who squanders something. There's a second definition of prodigal, which means one who radically gives something away. And that's more of where we go today. Look at it, last week looked at it from the nature of the father in the story. And then this week and next, look at it from the relation and the perspective of the two sons, one each week. And this week is the hardest, looking at it from the nature or the perspective of the older son, the one who seemed to do everything right and still had an injustice invoked on him. The way I left last week was this beautiful song that I remember from early on in my Christian formation called "When God Ran." And the song is a prodigal son story song that talks about, it does this juxtaposition of this magnificent, awesome, powerful, and mysterious God who doesn't need anything from anyone, doesn't need to be moved, doesn't require anything in all of the creation. And yet, for some reason, mysterious as it is, chose to bow to the created and come be with the created in order that the created would be loved and would have something to love that would be for eternity. And so the only time, the song says, that God ran was when He ran to us. Let that set the stage, the format for this today. And you heard Connie say it again too, that the beautiful part of the story is that while the Son was a long way off, the Father stopped what He was doing and ran to Him and kissed Him and brought Him back and had a feast in His honor and gave Him his robe and his beautiful ring and threw a party with a fatted calf. And this completely irked the older brother. The older brother who said to his father, and you can put your own words and your own attitude into this conversation. He did everything wrong, Dad. He took your money. He treated you as dead. He went off and he squandered it. Did you catch? You probably didn't quite catch that the earlier, the story was told twice in the passage that Connie read. The first part, it says that the son squandered the wealth. The older brother ad-libbed, or maybe it was his anger that drove, and said he squandered it on prostitutes. I mean, he even put a description in there that made the son look extremely bad. Whether it really happened or not, we don't know. But we know that that's the attitude that son had. And how that son, that older son, while the same time that the younger son was being brought home from being a long way off, that older son took a journey and went a long way off there in God's presence, in the Father's presence. Can you catch that, how that happened? And maybe the nature of God that we're looking for and grasping for is the nature of God while we are a long way off. And maybe you have been, or maybe you still are, a long way off from God. You know, one of the reasons that I think we stay a long way off is the reasons that are brought forward by the older son in description. When we encounter life circumstances that we don't understand, or when we see things happen in the world that just don't seem fair, they don't seem right, and we ask those questions about why God. We question even God in the midst of those. What happens or what potentially can happen is a void can be created in our relationship with God, and we find ourselves a long way off from those circumstances or because of those circumstances that we find ourselves in. So you and I probably can relate, at least at one point in our life or another, we can relate to having been the older brother. Having been that one that says, God, I just don't understand why this has happened. I don't know why you're doing this to me. And you may even be able to add what the son added. I've done everything right according to your rules. I stayed in the family, he said. I kept order in my life. I have followed all of your rules, and you've treated him better than me. We may can find ourselves in touch with that just a little bit. God, why do you allow injustice? A question that was asked a couple of weeks ago. Why do children have to suffer for the stupidity of adults? Why do you allow the suffering that we cause? I have been reflecting. And it just had to come out this week. One of the greatest examples of this for my own time of trying to understand God was back in the 80s and 90s with a man named Jeffrey Dahmer. You know, you may remember Jeffrey Dahmer. This guy was called the Milwaukee Cannibal. He was given 15 life sentences for murder, child molestation, dismemberment, and cannibalization. You may know the story of all that he did to pursue men and then take them back to his apartment where he not only raped, but then killed and dismembered, boiled their bodies in acid, and crushed their bones. And an amazingly evil man. And the injustice came for me when I learned, I believe it was 1991 or 2, when news came out through the Christian circles that Jeffrey Dahmer had been baptized. He'd become a born-again Christian. And as much as I wanted to say, yay, there's another one in heaven, I was angry. I was angry because I couldn't figure out, I couldn't justify in myself how justification could truly happen for someone like him. How could there ever be enough penance if he just said, I'm sorry, and God let him in? You catching where I'm going? You know, we try to define God's terms on our terms. We try to define God's actions on our will. And I was doing that, and I created in my own being, in my own spirit, I put a void there. You know, an angry void that made me a long way off from God in my thought process about what forgiveness is supposed to mean, what justice is supposed to mean, and how we're supposed to act and treat each other. Well, then in 1994, a couple of years later, he was beaten to death in jail while he was still in prison. And sadly enough, for a few minutes in time, I felt pretty good. You know, maybe you can catch on to that. That maybe justice had been served a little bit. And then having to back off from that and really have time alone with God, realizing that I was trying and actually pretty much succeeding in setting God's tone for God, doing God's work for God, and denying the nature of who God really is. You know, by phrases like, are you kidding me, God? You know, where does justice really come in for those victims? And now, you know, now years later and today, I can say that I have a more honest opinion that justice can come because God's in control of what happened and what continues to happen with people like that. Maybe you can identify with a situation somewhat like mine, that has made you question God enough that it creates a little void. That's the older brother void. That's what we're talking about. You know, Job has a whole book in the Bible where he goes through situation after situation that doesn't make sense and no one can make sense of it. And he gets to a point where he says, God, you don't care, you're not present, and you're not listening. And I don't understand. That's the void that we're talking about. Let's look at the next line of the scripture, the one that's not there. It ends in verse 32. So this would maybe be verse 33. The older brother's possible responses. There are probably a lot more than three possible responses that older brother could have given. Now, catch on to the story again. The father has just thrown this big party, and he has told the older brother, Your brother was dead and now he is alive. He is a lost and he is found. Let's go. He was lost and now he is found. Let's go celebrate. And that's where the story ends. That's verse 32. So what are the verse 33 responses for the older brother? The first response, he could have stayed angry and said to his dad, nope, I have a very hard heart about this. I am very upset and I refuse to go into that party. And walked away with that. Say, I'm sorry, but I cannot be a part of this. You been there? That's a possible response. And I probably, for many of us, could say it's one of the legitimate responses. I'm not going. I can't be a part of this injustice. In that sense, the older brother creates a faith void. A void in that relationship where one has been lost and found, and now the other one has become lost. So that's response number one. Response number two, the older son could go unwillingly to the party. That tucked down inside, that he's still angry, he's still pretty much miffed, he still feels like he's a victim of injustice, but he's loyal to his father. He's been loyal to his father all the way along. And dad wanted me to go to the party, I'm going to the party. I'm going in. That's a step of, maybe a step of faith presence. That my faith is not quite a void, still intact. I had a conversation this week with a very good friend of mine who is in the age right before retirement, just in the early, you know, the late 50, early 60s age, and has been directing a program for a number of years. In fact, for over 20 years, created a program and has been directing a program in a church, and was told by a staff parish member by text. I think maybe you look too tired and too old to do your job. Maybe you should resign. And when I heard this, I said, well, there's your retirement fund. You know, that's kind of considered age discrimination today. If you really wanted to pursue something, I think you had it there. But you know, the response that she had from that was just really beautiful. She said, you know, that hurt tremendously. And it hurt in a number of ways on a number of levels. But I love my church, and I love God, and I love the people that I have served. And so I'll walk away. I kind of connected her to the older brother there with that second response. And maybe I can go to the party, and maybe that hardened heart that I have will begin to get softened by the nature of God's love, the nature of who God is. So there's response number two. And then there's response number three, which I really want to say that the son engaged in. I want to say, and probably you do too, because probably you want the same for yourself in this situation. The son at that point bowed his head and allowed his heart to be changed and recognized that his father's love was deeper than he could even possibly understand at the time, and then go in and welcome his brother back home and say with his father, I'm glad that you're around. And that became where one option was a faith void, the next one was faith presence. This is probably faith victory, that faith overruled the emotions and the feelings of the heart. At annual conference this week, I received a blessing that was, it was just a blessing almost beyond words at the time. Back in a few years ago, it's been a number of years ago, as chaplain of the fire department, I was one morning in February, woke up early and was on my way to breakfast with my associate pastor. We were going to stop and have breakfast, and we had something to do later in the day that required us being together. And on the way to the breakfast meeting, I passed down on a rural road. I passed a car that was upside down the ditch. Looked like it had been there a long time. And I got to the end of the road. I turned right and got about a mile down Route 20, and my pager went off. Tones went off for a rollover accident on the road that I had just turned off of. And I realized that maybe this was maybe more fresh than I thought. I turned around and went back to the scene and radioed in that I was in the area and I would investigate, and pulled over. And as I got out of the car, I saw one set of legs underneath the hood of the car, which was upside down in the ditch, and radioed that back in, went over to and reached in as far as I could and radioed back the call sign, the 10 code for a deceased person. And waited then for the for everybody to get there and all the equipment so we could get the young man out. And as I was waiting there and walking around, I realized that this car had probably hit a patch of ice and caught then on dry pavement and rolled. And when it rolled, he went out, and then it rolled on top of him. There was stuff scattered everywhere from that car. And in the rubble was a set of offering envelopes from a neighboring Methodist church. And I knew that this was going to be someone who probably I knew. And so the story goes from there that this young man, Dan, 19 years old, had just started to get life figured out, graduated from high school, not really had the best high school career, kind of got caught up in drugs a little bit, was trying to figure himself out, had just started thinking about enrolling in the community college, and he was on his way on this day to a job interview that he had sought out for himself and was very excited about. And I then had the privilege of going to his home and telling his mother and seeing his mother and knowing that I knew her, and then going to the school and getting his brother, telling the administrator and telling his brother and bringing them back home and having that time together. And the story, of course, has lots of different points and details, but this is the one that means something to the older brother in us, the void that we have, is that Mom said to me at that time, I will never understand God. I will never love God. God doesn't care about me. And this is an active person in the church. Well, I saw her on Thursday. She came up to me. She saw me stand up in the room where we were all gathered and walk across. And she made an angle and caught up with me and said, do you remember me? I said, of course I do. And she said, I just want you to know that I found my place with God again. It's taken time. And I don't understand, and I can't understand fully, and someday maybe I will. But I can do two things until I understand fully. Now just catch this. She said, until I understand fully, I can love you, and I can pray for you. And I can give that message to anybody I meet. So she's become the lay delegate to annual conference for her church. And her message to the church and to the community is, I can love you, and I can pray for you, even though I don't fully understand. That's what I believe is the vision that the story has for us in our faith, is that when we are in that place where we feel a long way off, we can still grab at least a portion of the nature of the Father's unconditional love for us. And we can reach in and let that control, let that energize us. The integrity of the Father in the story is the integrity of the absolute consistency of the unconditional love of God. Absolutely consistent. Consistent with the brother, the son who left, who said, Dad, I treat you like you're dead, and I want everything that I'm going to get from you, and I'm going to leave. And he said, okay. Consistency there, consistency with welcoming him back, and consistency with the dealing with the other son. This is what we must do. Love must rule. Love must conquer all. And I can love a God like that. I can embrace an unconditional love like we see there. So in understanding this, remember there are two prodigals here. There's the one that squandered the wealth and was lost and was welcomed back home found. There's the other one that got lost in his own stuff, kind of a self-indulgence or wallowing in self-pity, and was found again in that. And as an invitation, I have an invitation and then something for you to think about this next week. The invitation is to let your heart be softened, just a little bit, by the unconditional love of God. And then the thought invoker. This story was told by Jesus to the deciders. This story was told to the Pharisees, not to the regular people. The people who created the law, the people who created the order in town, the people who made the judgments on right and wrong, good and bad. He told this story to them. What's that mean? What's that mean to you? I leave you with that to think about for the week and into next week. And now may the words of my mouth, the meditations that have been on our hearts, Lord, be acceptable in your sight, for you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen.